Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The Baltimore Sun reported last week that Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake asked Governor Larry Hogan for $30 million to implement police reforms. These reforms are expected to be included in the city's consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. Their investigation found a pattern of racial discrimination, illegal stops, and excessive force by the city's police. The city's budget is tight. Baltimore spent more than $475 million last year on policing, and the city is anticipating a $75 million budget shortfall next year. Reforms are expected to be pricey. Finding room for them in the budget could be hard. Negotiations with the Justice Department are expected to be completed by November 1st. The agreement will be court enforceable, meaning if Baltimore does not enact reforms, it could be sued by the federal government. Joining me to discuss the ins and outs of the coming consent decree is Dr. Samuel Walker, Professor Emeritus of Criminal Justice at the University of Nebraska. Samuel Walker has written more than a dozen books on policing and criminal justice and has advised police departments across the country. Dr. Walker, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What is the average length that cities are under a consent decree?
The consent decrees are all 5 years in the initial consent decree. But most police departments have not met that deadline, which means that at the end of the 5 years, they were not in full compliance with all of the terms of the consent decree. And in that case, the judge has the authority to continue it. And that has happened in most cases.
And is there an average cost?
Well, it's hard to say because there are cities of very different size, but the blunt fact is that consent decrees are expensive. For example, the Seattle consent decree, that was almost $1 million in the first year. And Seattle has a smaller police department than Baltimore.
What does most of that money end up getting spent for?
Well, most of it is for the monitor. The monitor is a court-appointed team. We use the term monitor, but it's actually a team of experts that are officers of the court, and they're job is to monitor the progress the police department is making towards complying with the terms of the consent decree. So there's a lot of personnel cost. One of the things the monitors do, they will be involved in, for example, approving a new use of force policy. That's almost certain in this consent decree. And so they're also a resource in helping the department develop the new policy. There's a lot of back and forth on those kind of things. There will be new training requirements. There'll be negotiations over that. So there are a lot of personnel costs with the monitoring team.
You know, the word monitor may sound to a lot of listeners like somebody who checks in occasionally on how things are going. This is a full-time job for several people.
Yes, it is. They may not be actually in Baltimore, you know, on the ground there. It's likely to be somebody, a team, from out of town, and that's actually a good idea. But for example, in terms of compliance with the consent decree, they will review and approve the new training curriculum. Then they would observe, you know, training classes to make sure that the training, in fact, reflects the new policy on use of force, for example. So there's a lot of legwork just on the ground.
Who chooses the monitors? Where do they come from?
The judge selects the monitor. They will do a request for proposals, and a number of different people and groups will apply. There is a small but growing professional community of people in the field of police accountability. These are people who have expertise in this area, know what the best practices are, probably be some applicants who are already involved in another city or have been in the past. So they have a body of expertise, and the judge will make the selection.
Is there a balance to be struck between having an outside impartial perspective and having someone more familiar with the issues in Baltimore?
The issues are common to all of the different cities that have been involved in consent decrees. It's having a state-of-the-art use of force policy. It's involved having state-of-the-art procedures for police officers reporting uses of force. The training procedures are pretty much the same. So being familiar with Baltimore or Cleveland or Seattle and the other cities in and of itself is not really that important. There have been cases. I know for a fact in Cleveland there were a lot of local attorneys applied for the job. It's unwise to have, I think, a monitor who has to be independent to have, you know, too close political ties with the local jurisdiction.
That's Samuel Walker, Professor Emeritus of Criminal Justice at the University of Nebraska and an expert on police reform. Here on The Record on WYPR, we're talking about what Baltimore should expect as it crafts a consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. Back on this question of what it costs, as I mentioned, Baltimore's Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake has asked the governor to contribute $30 million. Some of us are saying, how does she know how much to ask for? How does she know what the costs are going to be? Is this sort of going to be a template agreement? Is it so similar to agreements in other cities that people who know about agreements like this can say, oh, yeah, that's going to cost this, that's going to cost that, that's going to cost that?
That's probably true. The police problems are the same in just about all cities, with a couple of different local variations. And the remedies, the best practices, are the same. So if someone is really an expert in the field of police accountability, there will be nothing unusual and no surprises here. Now, I want to say that on the subject of cost, I have no sympathy for cities that claim that this is too expensive, because this is paying for things that should have been done years and decades ago in terms of raising the quality of the Baltimore Police Department. It never should have reached this stage. The best analogy would be that you own a house, and for 20, 25 years, you don't fix the leak in the roof, you don't fix the gutters, you don't fix the windows, you don't fix the front porch, you don't fix the leak in the basement. Well, after 25 years, you can't put that house on the market. It's below standard. And so we have the Baltimore City Police Department. The city did not invest in improvements, and now it's not up to minimal standards. And the bill has come due.
Does it follow from that that much as a homeowner might say maintenance costs are more manageable year after year if you keep that roof repaired, does it follow that after the initial investment in the consent decree for however many years that takes, that Baltimore's costs of public safety would be less?
Well, there are a number of different factors there. One of the characteristics of most cities on the East Coast is that they have too many police officers, and they are poorly managed such that there is really a huge waste in that regard. On the West Coast, you know, San Diego, San Jose, for example, they have far fewer officers per population. They're much leaner and much more efficient, and historically they've done a better job than the typical East Coast department. So there's some huge cost to be gained by better management, more efficient use of officers, and fewer officers.
The Baltimore Sun reported that the mayor's request to the state for funds for the consent decree includes $20 million over 5 years for an early warning system, a system that would flag problematic behavior by officers. Can you describe to us how a system like that works?
Yes. The preferred term is an early intervention system. It's one of my areas of expertise. I did a report, actually a couple of reports for the Justice Department, on them, just describing what they are and how they work. It's a computerized database of officer performance. So you put in the uses of force, the citizen complaints, you can put in arrests, you can put in traffic stops, you've got things like sick leave, you can put in officers missing court dates and so on. And then when you run the numbers at the far end of the scale, it spots the officers who have multiple performance problems. Then the next stage is an intervention. This is not a disciplinary system. It's not there to discipline officers. It's there to help officers. So the intervention would involve counseling on personal issues, retraining on particular police procedures, and it's designed to help officers improve their performance. Now, it's a very complex system. The money for the technical software is only part of the cost, because supervisory officers have to learn to work differently. They have a different job. Instead of being out there on the street, they are looking at data on a computerized database and learning how to spot officers with problems. And then the serious part is the actual intervention, where they have to sit down and talk to the officer, point out the problems, explain the purpose of the retraining or explain the purpose of the counseling. That requires a real shift in the mindset of supervisory officers in a department.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Samuel Walker, Professor Emeritus of Criminal Justice at the University of Nebraska and an expert on police reform, about what Baltimore can expect in a consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. You said this is not a disciplinary system. Does it coexist with disciplinary systems?
Yes. So for a particular use of force incident, officer used excessive force, internal affairs will investigate that and take appropriate action. That actually is another part of the consent decree that will be changed and need to be changed so that they are, in fact, disciplining officers where discipline is appropriate. But parallel to that, the early intervention system will identify a pattern of events in an officer's career and provide an intervention. So many police commanders have told me over the years that a lot of police officer problems on the street are the result of personal problems. And so in many cases, individual counseling on family issues or substance abuse is an important intervention.
In Missouri, the Justice Department brought suit after the Ferguson City Council voted to change a proposed consent decree. The City Council complained that the deal cost too much. If cities don't feel they have the funds to shoulder the cost of reforms, what can they do? Are there federal grants that are available?
Probably not for this. I think Baltimore's going to have to look for state assistance. There might be some grants for particular parts of it, let's say maybe a training program. But the fact is that City of Baltimore is conducting a form of policing that is unacceptable. It is unconstitutional. It is illegal. And people in the City of Baltimore are suffering. Uses of force and unjustified shootings. And that has to be fixed. If the city just is recalcitrant, they can be taken to court and held in contempt. Personally, there is no option at this point other than fixing the problem, and the consent decree is the way to do that. The current unacceptable practices cannot continue.
As you point out, the public has a great interest in this. How much does the public know as this process is unfolding? How often does a monitor make reports on the progress?
That'll be worked out as part of the agreement with the monitor. Some make quarterly reports. Some do semi-annual reports. And those reports are an enormous public benefit so that the public, that includes ordinary citizens, that includes the news media, that includes elected officials, will have regular reports on how much progress the department is making or not making. So, for example, in Washington, D.C., around 2003, the department made no progress. The first monitor's report said they had made no progress. The second one said, well, they had begun to make a little bit of progress, but they were already behind schedule. And we should point out one part of the consent of the consent decree is it sets timetables for reaching certain goals. So the public will be very well informed, much better informed than it ever was before. These reports are extremely valuable. I use them all the time in my research and my writing. It really gets inside a department and tells you what is going on.
How many cities' consent decrees have you examined?
Some of them I've examined in great detail, others in not so much. There have been about 25 different consent decrees around the country. We have 15,000 police departments. Obviously, that's a small number. A consent decree is an extreme remedy, but it is a necessary remedy for departments that have really proven to be incapable of reforming themselves.
Well, what I wanted to ask you is, what are the characteristics of a city or a consent decree that is successful?
Well, I think Cincinnati, people cite that one, for example. A number of different changes in how the department was conducting policing. Pittsburgh was actually the first consent decree in 1997. Now, the department and the city did a great job. They actually were in compliance at the end of the 5 years. Unfortunately, there was a city election and a new mayor, and he fired the police chief, who was very good, and replaced one with somebody who was not too good. The mayor was a little too cozy with the police union, and so things backslid in a way. And there's an extremely important lesson here. The consent decree is really only a beginning, because in the end, they'll finally comply. Consent decree will go away. The monitor will go away. The judge will go away. And the city of Baltimore is on its own. And it's up to the people of the city of Baltimore to be continually vigilant in making sure that these reforms, these best practices, continue.
Well, some people would look at how much Baltimore already spends on policing. They'd look at the current results and they'd conclude they don't have much faith that spending more money will lead to better results. What would you say to them?
Well, let's look at some of the money that they are spending. They're spending tens of millions of dollars in misconduct cases for abuses of citizens. That is money wasted. You shouldn't be paying that. That money could be much better spent on so many things, either in the police department or for after-school programs for kids. Misconduct is expensive. This whole issue of costs. There are dollars for police misconduct that should not have to be spent. But misconduct is more than dollars. I mean, people are suffering. People are being detained, arrested when they shouldn't be. People are being beaten up when they shouldn't be. And some people have been shot and killed when they shouldn't be. There is this enormous human cost. And so there will be many benefits from improving a police department.
Thank you for giving us some idea what we're in store for. Thanks.
It's not going to be easy. It's going to be a struggle. It will probably take more than 5 years. But there was an important conference in Washington a couple of years ago, and the former police chiefs of Washington and Cincinnati and Los Angeles, who had been through this experience, all said, yes, it was very painful, but we are a better police department because of it. Several of them pointed out they were being sued less often. There was less misconduct. There were fewer abuses and fewer lawsuits and payouts.
Dr. Samuel Walker is Professor Emeritus of Criminal Justice at the University of Nebraska. He's an expert on police reform. We spoke with him about what to expect as Baltimore nears the end of negotiating a consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. A short break now, and then a true tale from the Baltimore Stoop Storytelling Series. Stay with us.